Please be seated. Some several years ago, I was driving on a long night trip, and I think it was a Sunday night, and I forced myself to endure a sermon, a long one, by a preacher that could be described as fundamentalist and well-known. He's now gone on to his heavenly reward, and I suspect he's taking Correctional Theology 101. And I'll be in Correctional Theology 102 next door. We all will be. But in the sermon, he was waxing eloquently about how he was convinced that Jesus would return to earth before he died. He was wrong about that, obviously. And toward the end of the sermon, he then proceeded to appeal for $12 million to endow the college. Something in my brain said, no, wait a minute. If Jesus comes back before you, you don't need an endowment. So he was obviously living contrary to his theology. Well, he isn't the only one, is he? We all do. In the creed, we say that Jesus will come again in glory to judge the living and the dead, and his kingdom will have no end. But are our lives really shaped by that in any meaningful way? Many people in our culture have given up on the idea that there's any kind of an ending at all other than maybe some environmental cataclysm. In fact, some 15 or 20 years ago, Frank Kermode, a British Cambridge literary scholar who also was a Christian and has written extensively about the Bible, wrote a little book called The Sense of an Ending. And his thesis in that book was that the novel, as a form of literature, got its energy out of the loss of confidence in the end. Because novels have endings. So the final ending in his thesis is substituted for, since people lost confidence in it, by the novel, which has an ending. Interesting thesis, obviously. Great little book to read. But for me, as I think about it, I think about what my professor did to me in a doctoral seminar. I had waxed eloquently on what Paul taught in Thessalonians and Romans about the end of time, and when I got through presenting my paper, he looked at me and said, what do you think is going to happen? I went, I'm not really sure. It's almost impossible to envision. Have you tried to do that Jesus returns and the whole world knows and time as we know it comes to an end? That's really tough to visualize. I don't know about you, but it is for me. And yet, the idea that there will be an end is just in the New Testament all the way through it, and we affirm it in the creed. We don't know much about how it happens. And there are some people who fret about it a lot, and they talk about it a lot, because they're worried about the future, I suppose, and they talk about signs of the end, right? Well, according to this passage, when somebody is saying that the end is near, what are we supposed to do with that person? Jesus said, there will be many who will come, and they will say, I am he, and the end is near. Do not go after them. So the people who are focused so heavily on the time of the end, that's what they talk about all the time, and it's right around the corner. According to this text, what are we supposed to do with those people? Be careful. So somehow, we as Christians are called to affirm the creed that we believe there will be an ending, and yet at the same time understand that that's an unpredictable event. According to this text, Jesus says that the earthquakes and the other things that happen, the end is not yet. Those are not signs. Even though sometimes we're told they are. So, in chapter 17, by the way, of Luke, Jesus says, but the kingdom does not come with signs to be observed. And when I graduated from seminary, my first church was First Baptist Bloomsburg in Kentucky. I had a beautiful view of Mount Morgan out of my study window. You go through Mount Morgan, or sort of a foot of it on I-75 when you're going And I sat there and looked out my window and asked myself, do I really believe the stuff I've been studying in seminary for the last 8 years? It was a Baptist church, and they didn't know that I was preaching through the Apostles' Creed every Sunday, line by line. If you had asked them what the Apostles' Creed was, most of them would have known. But I was trying to work out my own theology. And I would run to the pulpit, blow on them the paper to dry the ink off, because by Friday after I'd done all that reading, I knew I had to have a sermon. And when I got through that process, everything in the creed that we talk about, I came to conclude, for me personally, I took it literally, that there would be an end, and that Christ would come, even though I didn't understand it. And that whenever that is, can't be predicted. Luke is writing this gospel 50 to 60 years after the resurrection. People were beginning to get discouraged about the end because it had been delayed, and that's what he's trying to help them deal with in this passage. Don't let the delay of the end make you vulnerable to people who say it's tomorrow. Can't be predicted, but it will happen. And even though we can't predict it, we expect it, and how are we supposed to live? Well, I think Jesus tells us in this passage. Because he tells us all these things are going to happen in the future, and then, right in the middle of the paragraph, there's a but. But, before all these things, they're going to persecute you, they're going to lock you up, the Holy Spirit will tell you what to say. In other words, there's another event closer, as my professor used to say, than the second coming of Jesus. And that event is your next heartbeat. And that may have happened. So what Jesus is saying to us in this passage is the future is in God's hands. We cannot predict it. We can anticipate it. But the best way to anticipate the second coming is to be on mission. Stay involved in the world on mission. That's how to be ready. Here is, let the Holy Spirit help you testify. But for us, if we want to live in consistency with the creed, not only will we understand that there will be an end and that everything around us is temporary and we'll sit loose to it, but we'll be on mission in the meanwhile. Every time somebody is forgiven of their sins and reconciled to God, a little bit of the future comes into the present. Every time someone is healed, we see what the resurrection is like. A little bit of God's future in the end of time comes into the present. Every time two people are reconciled in a relationship, a little bit of what the future is going to mean when Jesus returns is brought into the present. Every time someone is comforted in sickness or grief, a little bit of God's future comes into the present. The future with Jesus in the end. Last Thursday, Marcia died. Sunday and Wednesday, I went to take communion and anoint her for prayer. Wednesday, we had no way of knowing it was her last one. And she was ready. She knew she was near the end. When I anointed her with oil and I served her communion first, anointed her with oil, her face glowed. It was like she was comforted in the presence of Christ, in spite of him. That's what the future is. When God will wipe away all tears from all faces, there will be no more pain, no more suffering. A little bit of that came into the present Wednesday afternoon. So what our call is, I would say one more thing. Every time an injustice is corrected, we see a little bit of what God's future is like in the present. Every time a river is purged of pollution, that's a little bit of an indication of what the future is going to be like when Christ comes and the environment is redeemed. So our challenge today is to notice the but in this passage. But before all these things, stay